So January 25th was my first protest. I never cared about anything, you know, that had to do with human rights or politics or social justice in Egypt, just because I felt there was no hope. But January 25th completely changed my life. That now every day I wake up and I think, how's Egypt?
The invitation to the 25th of January event had a slogan, bread freedom human dignity.
Bread, freedom, and human dignity.
I'm going to fight for my freedom and justice, even if I will pay my life.
And we just hit the streets and talked to people and prepared for the 25th. And we were also preparing for this with Kolena Khalid's side page on Facebook. It has more than 1 million people as members now. We thought that we were all going to be, you know, just taken to prison on the spot. And we started as 100 people, and all of a sudden we became 20,000.
Hmm? Only prison?
Only prison and torture and everything, everything, hanging, everything. And all of a sudden it became big.
I'm Heba Marayef, Human Rights Watch's Egypt researcher. I was born in Alexandria and grew up in Egypt, and I'm now based in Cairo.
A day of hope in Cairo. The police weren't beating demonstrators in the way that we often see them doing.
I went to the protests every day. So I started making these voice recordings a few days into the Tahrir uprising at the end of January 2011 and continued into early February.
Marching in the streets of Cairo is always the ultimate goal of any demonstration, always a completely unattainable one, because police cordon demonstrators off and start arresting and beating them. So the feeling of walking through the streets and shouting, Yasqut, Yasqut, Hosni Mubarak, fall, Mubarak, fall, we want you to leave, was an invigorating experience that I don't think any of the thousands of activists will forget soon. Is this enough to build a more sustained, mobilized movement in Egypt? We don't know yet. How angry were people? How would they have responded to violence? Would that have broken their political will? People were still trying to get in, but the riot police had completely blocked off the entrance. And as I walked out, one man complained and said, why won't you let us in? And the riot policeman responded saying, come back tomorrow, there'll be more tomorrow. I think that's the big question. Will there be more tomorrow? But once you mobilize young people, they don't forget. And already my generation is far less apathetic than my parents' generation.
A few weeks after the protests, Human Rights Watch interviewed some of the political activists, human rights defenders, families of victims who'd been shot dead during the January uprising. These are the protesters, performers, and Egyptian people who stood up for the country in Tahrir Square. You are listening to Hearing Voices from NPR, and these are the voices from Tahrir.
Everyone was there. Old people, young people, couples, families, young kids, toddlers, babies, everyone was there.
All elements of the Egyptian society. You could see Copts, Muslims, communists, and rich people, poor people, people coming from countryside.
And I saw a conservative religious man with a beard talking casually about politics with, you know, a very modern-looking girl and feeling that they were both part of the same cause.
In Tahrir Square at night, I saw young mothers with their suckling babies under the tents, living under the rain and the cold, staying all the night and day there.
1 a.m. of the 26th of January, and the police became very, very tough on us.
Ala El Aswani is an award-winning Egyptian novelist.
And we ran, and there was the gas bombs, and I did not think that it's going to be a real revolution. So there were young people around me, and I told them that, fine, then we did a very good job. Today there were more than 1 million in the square, so you go home, and tomorrow morning, we're going to make another manifestation. And I was surprised. They were really refusing. No, we never go home. And I was very touched. I felt for the first moment there is something I don't understand. This is a very different spirit.
On the bridge, the famous bridge, which is the Qasr al-Nil one, you felt, okay, this is the road to Tahrir, this is the road to liberation. And it was the day we actually managed to settle in Tahrir and create this Tahrir utopia, or, the republic, as we call it.
Salih Moore is a Coptic Christian. Muhammad Abbas used to be with the Muslim Brotherhood.
It's very nice. This moment, we said it's a revolution.
It's a revolution, yeah.
And this time, we make it.
And it's a Facebook revolution, so that's even funnier, I guess. Everybody was making fun of you, you know, who plans for a revolution on Facebook and who plans for a revolution on a specific day. There is no date for a revolution. And we said it was the 25th of January. We had a date, so it was the police anniversary, and we gave them a nice one.
January 25th was declared a public holiday by the Mubarak government. It's a day to celebrate Police Day. There would always be a big speech by Hosni Mubarak, and Police Day, for those of us on the activist side, sort of symbolized everything that was wrong with Mubarak's Police Day. The most powerful chant that we heard from the very first day of the protest was Al-Sha'ab Yurid Isqat al-Nizam, which means the people want the downfall of the regime. That resonated so strongly because it was a chant that we'd first heard in Tunisia, and it was about a change of the entire structure. It wasn't just about Mubarak, it wasn't just about his ministers, it was about the whole regime. The second big protest was January 28th, and the night before, the government shut down the internet and also shut down mobile phone communication.
On the 27th, after they said to us they will let the cell phones down, I thought that we will die tomorrow. So I went to my home and see my baby and saying to him, bye, we have the right to leave.
The more violent they got, the more angry we as protesters became. So when they actually cut it, I knew beforehand, because we kept hearing rumors every now and then that they're going to do that. So we knew that the phones would be cut off. And when it actually happened, I'm like, okay, you're giving me even more reason to be out there.
Yeah. You remember there was this banner from Anonymous back then supporting us, and it was, if your government shut down the internet, shut down your government. And it was really how, how we were.
The first thing I thought was just like, how scary are we? Or like, how weak are you?
That's it.
But ironically, you switch off the internet and mobile phones, people go to the streets, it seemed. Because how else can you look for people? How else can you find them except go and physically be with them in the same place? And so it completely backfired.
On that day, we needed so much communication, not to go down to protest, but to save lives. And guess what? There were millions of people in the street all over Egypt. And the police retreated that day, so it was victory for that day.
Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar!
I mean, it was more than 100,000 on the 25th, even much more. And then by the 28th, we were sure that after the prayers, whether it's from the churches or the mosques, we were going to get big gatherings. And I think that was the time I felt, okay, that's going to be a battlefield. And it was actually a battlefield.
The riot police was not that prepared on the 25th to face this big a number. So it was easy to break all the barriers. But on the 28th, it was a true war zone.
they were shooting what we thought initially were rubber bullets, and we were seeing people just fall on the ground. And then suddenly we realized that there were snipers, that there were people on the rooftops of buildings around Tahrir Square that were just shooting people point blank. You would see, you know, a green laser light, and then a second later that person would get hit in the face or in the chest, and that's how many people were killed. And that was not targeting particular leaders, because there weren't any. It was just a scare tactic. It was meant to send a message that even if you're standing by watching what was happening, we could get you. No one is safe on Tahrir Square.
I saw one of the youth die in front of me because of the gunshots from the police. Being a doctor, I tried to save him, but it was too late. I felt kind of responsible of what happened to him. But meanwhile, I think that this was the right thing to do. So that was a very difficult moment for me.
When we were on the bridge clashing with security agencies, that was, of course, the scariest moment. We saw so much blood and so much violence, but we also saw how those security officials did not really care. They knew that what they were doing was not in the interest of the country. It was the people versus the regime. And the regime was, you know, guns and clubs and tear gas. And the people were simply unarmed except for their extraordinary courage and caring for one another.
When I got shot, I was in actually in the middle of Tahrir Square. All of a sudden, I found my eyes just really hurts. I knew there's something seriously wrong. I could have lost my eye in an accident or in something, you know, minor, but I felt, I lost my eye for a real cause, for the freedom of the people. And I've seen the other injuries. I mean, my injury is nothing compared to others. So I swear to God, I haven't felt sorry once. What we're doing is much bigger than my eye or my body or myself. You're not living for your own. You're not living for your own desires, your own needs. You're living to have something positive to live in this world. So when you die, you know you've done something. You know, I'm not just a person who just ate and drank and had kids and money and then died. You know, you have something of value that you're adding to humanity. بطل يا مصري يا مصري بطل بطل يا مصري يا مصري يا مصري بطل يا مصري يا مصري يا مصري.
You are listening to Voices of Tahrir. I'm Heba Mariaf of Human Rights Watch, and this is Hearing Voices.
So I'm walking across Athlone Bridge again. Communication is back, and the festive mood dominates Cairo despite the wafts of black smoke in the background. There's only one subject that everyone's talking about. It's whether or not Mubarak has resigned. People are climbing on the cannons being driven around by the army, kissing the army, and they embrace the army. And they hate the police. They hate the riot police. We heard gunshots around the Ministry of Interior as people were apparently trying to storm the Ministry of Interior. Three dead men were carried out.
I realized how big this is on the 29th of January.
Hossein Bahgat is executive director of the Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights.
So on the 28th, we fought security forces. There was so much violence, so much blood. A day later, the square was completely packed with people. And I looked around me and I saw, you know, Egyptians of different ages, different religious affiliations, different social classes and political views. And even if this is only a first step in a fight that's going to last for months or years, I knew then that we were going to win this fight. By the sheer power of our numbers and of our togetherness.
There were a lot of Christians praying for liberation, and actually we have a liberation mosque and the liberation church.
Salih Moore is a Coptic Christian. She and Muhammad Abbas, formerly of the Muslim Brotherhood, helped organize the youth movement in the square.
He said, as youth Muslim Brotherhood, they want to change the image of the Brotherhood as well. They don't want to be the scary crow anymore because they have been for a long time. So they want to be more open to the world, more of negotiators. I want to add something about the Christian church. Christians here in Egypt always had the trouble that the head of the church will tell us you're not allowed to protest. If you want to ask for something, you go and ask through the head of the church. So if you have a problem with a government agency or anything, you have to go through the church. And I think the biggest achievement of this revolution for the Christians in Egypt is the fact that they now feel, I do not have to follow your orders in politics, because church is something and politics is another. If I want to pray in church, I'll pray in church, but I'll go and ask for my demands out in Egypt, on the street, with the Muslims and with the rest of the Egyptians. So that's a massive change.
So I'm in Tahrir Square, and as far as the eye can see, the square is full of people, men, women, veiled, not veiled, beards, no beards, lots of Muslim Brotherhood, women wearing the niqab, people who brought their kids, people who brought their loudspeakers with them. I've been out on the streets of Cairo all day since Tuesday in massive crowds. Vast majority men, though lots of women, and I haven't been sexually harassed once, which is always an indicator that there are greater things at stake, because that's usually something that happens to you in any big crowd, especially downtown. When you're in Tahrir Square, you feel a lot more secure, partly because the atmosphere here is so festive, and also because of the things that people are chanting, the energy behind the Mubarak, Ya Mubarak, Ghur, Mubarak out, Zihina, Ya Mubarak, Al-Hilal wa-Salib, Ma'an. For once, people power did make a difference. And regardless of what comes out of this, that is a narrative which can't be taken away from us. I'm never going to be as dismissive about social media again, because I've seen how communication made it happen.
I think Khaled Said and what happened with Khaled Said was one of the main incidents that led up to the revolution. I think many would agree.
Khaled Said was a young Alexandrian who was beaten to death on a crowded street by two policemen in June 2010. The brutality of this beating sparked outrage across Egypt, and protests against torture took place for the following months. Google marketing executive Wael Ghanem put up a Facebook page called We Are All Khaled Said, which used to coordinate and plan a lot of these protests.
It just went beyond imagination. Everyone on the internet started talking about it. People were started printing stuff, going to the streets, promoting it. And it was just, you know, if the internet have done one thing, it actually helping break the psychological barrier of fear. That's what the internet did, bringing everyone collaborating together, thinking that I'm not alone, I can be part of this big group, and I'll be protected.
Like, there's no way you could ever forgive the authorities for brutally killing Khaled Said.
Tariq Shalabi is a website designer in Cairo.
There are a lot of people who would come together on this page or on this case and be like, we need to stand up for this. This is because we are all Khaled Said.
من أول ما خالد مات تاني يوم المظاهرات كانت تحت البيت كانوا بيقولوا يسكت يسكت حسني مبارك.
This is Khaled Said's mother, Layla.
From the day after the death of Khaled, with the same in them, there were demonstrations calling for Hosni Mubarak to step down. But then Mama Layla continues to say, I would tell the demonstrators, don't raise your voices too loud, don't make the regime upset with you, especially that there were soldiers that were beating them up. They would come and see me, 50 of them at a time, and some of them would be injured because of the confrontation with the police. and I would take care of them, and I would feed them, and I would read Quran on their wounds until they felt better, and then they would go down again. And they would arrest them, sometimes for a week on end.
The first time I've seen Mama Layla, or, you know, Khaled Saeed's mom, was actually in Tahrir Square.
Google marketing executive Wael Ghanim.
She was crying. I felt, you know, I felt so good. I felt so related to her. And one thing she told me is like, my son didn't die. You are my son.
الشباب في التحرير ما قعدت معهم أسبوعين أنا وزهرة الثورة كلها.
With Zahra and I spent the 2 weeks of the revolution on Tahrir Square among the youth in Tahrir, and I would often get on the stage and address them. And the camel night, our car was parked where the battle was, so we couldn't get to it. And besides, they were waiting for people to get out of Tahrir to basically kill them. Mm-hmm. So it was we stayed on the square, and I would go on stage and say, stand your ground, don't be scared. The worst that could happen is that we die martyrs and join Khaled. And they listened to me and they would all chant, we are all Khaled Saeed.
When Khaled Saeed died, we were all touched. I hate injustice and I felt like it's unfair that the people who did that will run away with their crime. And knowing that, you know, you are in a regime that does not respect human rights, and we wanted to make the case public because they're always scared of public, and the way they would treat the public case would be much better. This is what we hoped for when the page was created.
And that changed everything.
Hossein Bahgat of the Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights.
So by 2010, when Khaled Saeed was murdered in Alexandria, and I'm from Alexandria, but I never thought in my life that there could be an online forum to discuss torture with hundreds of thousands of members, disseminating information and discussing ideas of how to mobilize against it. And suddenly, I see thousands of families, middle-class families, fathers taking their kids and their wives to the street, dressed in black and standing silently to express their outrage at the practice of torture. And without this and without the internet, we would not have had the police day demonstration plans that turned into a revolution against the regime. And, you know, the rest is history.
The voices from Tahrir were recorded by Human Rights Watch. Coming up, thoughts on Egypt after the uprising, when we continue in a minute with Voices from Tahrir.
Hearing Voices is supported by the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
You are listening to Hearing Voices. I'm Heba Marayef of Human Rights Watch. Welcome back to Voices from Tahrir.
It's interesting to see the evolution in the mood in the square. This is the seventh day running, and you'd think that people start getting very tired, but no, they're out here, and people really feel that they can completely express themselves for the first time on the street in Egypt.
Tahrir really felt like freedom, being on the square among thousands and thousands of people where security was around the corner but could not intervene. It was the first time I felt at the age of 42 that I'm free.
My mom was basically at the square every day. The very first day, she kind of went off on her own, and my sister and I were trying to like hold her back and be like, hey, can you make sure we're around you? We don't want you wandering off on your own, you know? You're kind of our responsibility. You're visiting our territory here.
I think on the 24th, my dad asked me, if you're not back, what do I do? In a very calm voice. And I'm like, okay, those are the numbers that you need to be calling. On the 28th, we had a meeting point with my friends, and then half an hour later, when I got there, my dad showed up, and he's like, I'm going with you. And then later on, he and my mom would show up in Tahrir Square too. So they were very, very supportive. And when my dad wouldn't like a speech by one of the people in authority, he'd say, aren't you going to Tahrir? So that's my family.
It's day 8, and there's barely room to walk. at least twice as many people as have been in the square over the past few days. And at the entrances, what I think is really an indicator of a general mood here, they're not only checking IDs and telling us that they want to make sure that no convicted criminals and significantly no policemen are able to sneak into the square. They've also created a separate entrance for the women so that women are protected from harassment, a very big concern in any public space in Egypt.
I am 80 years now. I was dreaming of this revolution when I was 10 years.
Noëlla Saadawi is a writer, a psychiatrist, and a veteran women's rights advocate.
So this revolution was delayed 70 years. 70 years, and I was dreaming of it day and night. And I walked in almost all demonstrations since King Farouk, Nasser, Sadat, Mubarak. And we demonstrated against them all, because we women and the poor, and especially the poor women like me who came from poor families, we were betrayed in every revolution. We go to the streets and we die. Our blood on the asphalt, and we suffer. We lose members of our families, and we are arrested. They put us in prison, and then the army take over, as happening now. Now the army taking over and arresting the poor people and women who made the revolution. But the revolution is going on. We will never stop.
It was very different depending on the day. Some days Tahrir would look like a battlefield, street fighting. Other days it would be the biggest party you can ever go to. The whole 18 days were a roller coaster because you could not ever tell what the next day would bring. We've seen them bring the F-16s on Sunday the 30th of January, and on the 2nd of February we've seen them deploy camels and horses.
Every night you'd have new musicians coming to the square. And there were some bands who were known for being more critical of the government under Mubarak. Romy Assom wrote a couple of songs, one based on all the different chants that you'd hear in Tahrir, where at one point he would sing Irhal, Irhal, and the crowd would chant with him. Irhal means go. Romy Assom became known as the singer of the square.
And he's
saying that the Irhal means leave. And that his songs motivated the people. And actually he mentioned that he got hit before he was tortured by the military. He got hit in the square. This was on the famous Wednesday, the Wednesday when there were camels and horses inside the square. He got hit on his mouth and on his head. And this was the only day he didn't sing.
It's Friday, February 4th. It's 3 p.m. and the square is already almost at maximum capacity, almost as crowded as it was last Friday, the day of anger. The atmosphere in the square is, it seems like a different world from the last 2 days where there was violence, there were gunshots.
Whenever you were on the square, It felt so safe, even at the worst moments. Even when we were under attack, it felt so safe because we were many, many people.
Gesser Abdelreza is on the board of the Egyptian Organization for Human Rights.
The only time we felt really shaken was away from Tahrir. When we were stopped on the 3rd of February trying to bring in some medical supplies and food to the people that were injured on the 2nd, and we were stopped by thugs with swords and knives, and everything we had in the car was stolen. And that's the only day we did not go to Tahrir. We were very shaken that we took the car back home and stayed.
It's Saturday, February 5th. At the entrance to the square on Custer Neil Bridge, the army has moved its tanks further back, where they're checking people's IDs. Further down, you go through another two checkpoints manned by volunteers who search your bag and body search you. I got into a bit of a discussion with my colleague who has a US passport and said, well, why do you want to go into the square? We said we were from an international human rights organization, something I would have never said before January 25th. Because the word human rights evoked fear, evoked state security surveillance. And I think one of the happy stories for me personally of these past 11 days has been people's willingness to openly tell me about their experiences, to reach out to me saying, Heba, how can we help? What can we do to help in this crisis? So at the entrance to Tahrir Square, we eventually managed to convince him that we were from a human rights organization, and he said the army had given them instructions to only let in foreign journalists or people from international human rights organizations. I was a bit surprised at that, and I asked him, are you sure the army's telling you to let in international human rights organizations? And he said, well, no, they said journalists, but I think you guys are probably going to be pretty useful as well.
When the revolution started, I asked myself a question. Was my 17 years of doing human rights work worth it? And my answer is clear. It is the work we did and people before us 20 years ago and 30 years ago of exposing state brutality, torture, attacks on freedom of association. I think that's what has led us 20 years later to the revolution.
People tell me this is a social media revolution. I tell them that they're idiots, don't understand anything. This is just another syndrome of like lazy Western journalism. They always want to give it like a cutesy name.
Yes.
Like, and they want to call us the Lotus Revolution, and then they went to Facebook. And
yeah.
Honestly, you know, they shut down the internet 27th. Okay, on the 28th, we increased, you know, and the following Tuesday, we increased. Until then, the internet was not back. So it wasn't based on that. We had to use social media in order to get the word out at first. But the reality was this was individuals' revolution. And you know, what the thing is, Egyptians are natural social networkers. Mm-hmm. Send us anywhere, and we know five people in your friends, in your group, somehow we'll connect to it. So when they shut down the internet, they shut down whatever, we managed to reach each other.
It's Monday, February 7th. Today is the day of remembrance for all of those who died in the protests, especially on Friday 28th and Saturday 29th. There are families standing, holding up posters of their killed relatives. There's a little makeshift pharmacy where people are still being treated for their wounds and having their bandages changed. One group of people walking around holding up the picture of journalist Ahmed Mahmoud, who was killed when he was shot. By the entrance to the square along the bridge, there's a whole line of posters of those who died. The square has seen a lot of violence and a lot of joy.
These people are determined to death to change the regime. It is a revolution.
It's very bad for my government. I haven't food, I haven't anything. Me and my children, I will die today.
We'll not be silenced, whether you're a Christian, whether you're a Muslim, whether you're an atheist. You will demand your goddamn rights, and we will have our rights, one way or the other. We will never be silenced.
We here belong to all Egyptians.
We want to be free.
Ya Mubarak wa la Suleiman.
Ya Mubarak wa la Suleiman.
عايزين هذا ولا مدنية
لا طائفية ولا دينية.
Ezay means how, and this was a song written by Mohamed Munir, who's one of the most famous pop stars in Egypt today. So when he wrote this song, Ezay, about the revolution, about how it is impossible to accept things as they were under Mubarak, that song became one of the anthems that you would hear all around Tahrir.
We've just seen the news that Mubarak may be resigning, may be stepping down, or alternatively handing over power to the military. And so I'm heading down to Tahrir Square, walking down Kasraini Street, just past the parliament. Women are ululating from the upper balconies. People seem to think that this is the moment that they've been waiting for. One of the tanks parked outside is blasting out music, and people are gathered around it.
The atmosphere is amazing in the square, and there's this new electric energy that everyone is feeling as people walk around and ask each other, have you heard? Do you know what's happening? I'm in a corner of the square where they set up a stage, and a lot of Cairo's independent bands have been playing here over the last couple of days. Right now there's a folk group from the city of Port Said playing.
The day before it, okay, actually what we call the third day of paralysis, because he came, it was felt that this man is not going to go after all this. I was watching it on the screen in the square, actually, and in front of me there was a banner coming down from the building with all the pictures of the martyrs so far, and I was crying hysterically that night, and I felt, oh my God, I can't believe that I'm actually seeing all these dead, beautiful youth, you know, and he's still on TV telling me that he's staying. But something inside me felt, no, this man is gonna go.
When it comes to feeling that Mubarak is going to leave, I think maybe I can go to February 10th after his speech, the really long one that was really intimidating to all of us. People decided to go to the presidential palace, and we were just like, we're staying here until he goes. And I think that's when I really believed that he will absolutely leave. Absolutely. And he did.
Suddenly this massive roar went up over the square and people started jumping up and down saying, he's gone, he's gone. There's no mistaking the intense excitement, like Egypt winning the African Cup, but multiplied by millions across Egypt today, a Friday, the weekend, and the anger of this morning after prayers is sort of exploding into this massive outburst of joy.
It was the last day to Mubarak in our Egypt. I am a brother of Egyptian. I love Egypt.
I love Egypt!
But in my,
I love Egypt!
I was in denial for like 45 minutes and then partying for like 16 hours. It was like the biggest sober party in like the world.
On the day when he gone, the Friday, I was actually buying sandwiches for the coalition. And I heard, you know, stuff in the streets I've never heard before. I know this man is gone. And that's it. You know, everything was new. So he's gone, and we celebrated. So
we unseated Mubarak. This is amazing. We unseated a dictator after 30 years. And so suddenly we are motivated by an amazing sense of self-confidence that we are completely unstoppable and that we are going to win.
My dad was not supportive whatsoever, and we weren't really on speaking terms throughout the 18 days. And, you know, I got a call from him after Mubarak resigned, and he was crying on the phone, and he's saying, you were right. So, now everything's changed in my house.
And I remember, for example, how the people were really feeling very responsible.
Ala El Aswani is an award-winning Egyptian novelist.
It was about 3 a.m. in the square, so I threw my packet of cigarette on the ground. And a veiled lady of at least 70 years old came to me and said that I am among your fans, said I love your writing, thank you very much. And she said, take this back. And she said, you must throw this in the garbage. And I did that, and I came back to her with the feeling of a guilty child, you see. And she said, we are building up the new Egypt, and the new Egypt should be clean. And I believe this, that's why I said, this is the real achievement of the revolution. And to me, it's much more important than the constitutional reforms. I do believe that what is human is much more important than what is political.
The day after Mubarak resigned, there was a big cleanup operation. Activists who'd been camping out in the square for the last 18 days wanted to take care of it.
And everybody was calling, okay, now let's all go clean Tahrir Square as a symbol of the cleaning the whole country of corruption. So my kids, they were so excited. We went with some of our neighbors, and the boys got to clean. And it was really nice because we had to park a long way from Tahrir. And we walked to Tahrir Square, and there were lots of people. We were calling out to each other and encouraging each other to clean. And some people would borrow a broom for us. We had got extra stuff with us. So, and I think the boys were very excited, and they saw how people were really cooperating in doing this cleanup together. We just hope, we are optimistic, we yes. hope that it
will continue.
The revolution will continue, and we're still worried that where we're going.
It can go backwards, actually.
Yeah, so we're just hoping that Egypt keeps on the right track and becomes a great country.
As parents, we all know that there would have been some kind of a stage after the revolution. We all expect this. We all are aware enough to know that there will be some chaos after. And at the end of the day, we're doing this for our kids. And that's why we wanted them somewhat involved, to an extent, of course. So Our kids,
because they're going to be the grown-up in a couple of years. Yeah. They're going to be us. And if they grow up seeing this and they see they can make a difference.
We are proud to be Egyptians. After the revolution, we are more proud.
Yes.
And I'm happy that I see my son, Omar, not wanting to be in another country or belonging to another country. We are Egyptians. And they're listening to more Arabic music, actually. That's a change, yes. because before that, they only listened to English songs. And now they are more interested in listening to Arabic music. بطل يا مصري يا مصري يا مصري
بطل يا مصري. You are listening to Voices of Tahrir. I'm Heba Marai of Human Rights Watch, and this is Hearing Voices. يا مصري يا مصري بطل يا مصري
يا مصري يا مصري. Before the revolution, on the streets, I would say people were angry, they were frustrated.
And passive. Who cares?
Exactly.
It's not our country.
During the revolution, if you go to Tahrir Square, we were, I think, on it was a Wednesday.
28th?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I was there.
Wednesday.
I was proud to be Egyptian. Even I called my friends, please go on my Facebook and write, I'm proud to be Egyptian, because you're walking between a million people coming from everywhere, and no one comes near you. And if you're a woman, they would put me in the beginning of the queue because everyone would just open doors. Even someone touches you by mistake. I'm sorry. The spirit was so beautiful. It was really nice. After the revolution, I would say, people are looking for stability. They were frustrated because they saw that the minute he steps down, everything will be hunky-dory. So people were angry again on the street. People were driving with so much anger and frustration, and I would say it's not the same as before, but it's as bad. So I think this is a transition that we're going to go through.
It's Sunday the 13th, the first day of the working week, and the first time people have actually wanted to go back to work since January 25th. It's quite surreal, the complete flip in coverage by the state media, both TV and the newspapers.
And even radio stations that play pop music are now having their morning talk shows all about. Tell us about your freedom experiences. Back at the square where I am right now, mood is still happy and intense conversations going on about the future of Egypt.
And right afterwards, all my censored work got published again. I don't think that now they can possibly censor us the way they did before, because everyone's thinking every single day, how can we say this and how can we say that? People took the streets, they've been painting graffiti, they've been printing out flyers and distributing them everywhere. A lot of newspapers that have been shut down are back. So I think so far we're fine. We do have issues. There are stuff that we can't be talking about. For example, the army. We can't be really talking about the army. But I think we've pushed already the limits far enough. We just need to keep pushing in the same direction.
Sundus Shabaik is a citizen journalist. Sara Abdurrahman hosts Sara's World, a popular series of video commentaries on YouTube.
We can't go back from where we were or what happened that day on the 25th. I've never seen so many people in my entire life asking for one thing. So if I have to fight for that freedom, I think I will go as far as it takes, as far as it takes. If you, as a human being, believe that you deserve life, a better life, then you should snatch it, because it's not going to be given to you. You have to snatch it.
People believe that change will take years and maybe decades, but the thing is, after the revolution, I thought that worst case scenario would be nothing would change for the coming 10 years, but at least the coming generations would know that we did what we can to change it. So give your children something to be proud of.
Yeah. All Egyptian, proud to be Egyptian.
It was good to be Egyptian.
Mohammed Abbas used to be with the Muslim Brotherhood, but broke off to form his own party. Sally Moore is a Coptic Christian.
The thing is that we removed the head, and we thought, okay, removing the head means everything will collapse. But it didn't, because there is the body that was left. And I think what happened is that lots of the remains of the regime, they just hid for a while, you know, hid in the corners. But then they came again, and they hit back. So there is the anti-revolution, what they're doing, hitting back through sectarian tension, imprisoning people again, or making problems between the army and the people, which is going to be big.
Yeah,
if you go for just half a revolution, you're actually digging your own grave. It's either a full revolution or not. Because if we didn't go all the way, we would have been all in prison now with treason. So we would never ever see the light again. So I think it just saved us. It became a revolution.
We have a nation to build.
Jawed Nabulsi was wounded in the protests. He lost his left eye.
For the revolution to succeed, we are still in the beginning. I mean, there are still people who can't find food to eat, and they're suffering big time. The injustice is still there. So if we are the ones who are responsible for causing such movement and such change, we have to complete to the end. And this is not a time to just object. No, it's time to build. If we build it successfully, we know it will be franchised to other nations in which they can follow the same path.
Add to all of this that we are also coming face to face with another threat that was not part of the game before, which is the army. This is another battle that we have to go through.
Mahmoud Salem, Gigi Ibrahim, and Mona Saif are young Egyptian bloggers and social media activists.
I pity whoever becomes our next president, because he's going to be screwed. Because people are going to be expecting the economy to like bounce back in 3 months.
There will always be corruption too, and this is why it's so important to always defend this revolution and what it stood for. And this will not be achieved in a year or two. You know, it's a long-term process that we are going to continuously keeping and fighting for those principles.
يضحكوا يا صورة ها 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 قالك ايه قلة مندسة يضحكوا يا صورة
Singer رامي عصام
بعد الاعتصام الكبير ما حصل احنا الناس كلها كانت مشيت من الميدان
After the great sit-in people started leaving the square but he started like thinking that we should stay to make the revolution successful so the military they weren't that happy about this so they started collecting and detaining people he was one of them
لما دخلنا جوه وعرفوا ان هما معانا
When they knew that he was the singer of the revolution They made him take off his clothes and they started for 4 hours electrocuting him and beating him up. But he, from the very beginning, he took the decision that he will keep silent, and they didn't find any reaction from him, so they started electrocuting him more and more. So they left the electricity on his body until he got on fire. And now he has a huge responsibility of spreading the message of what happened to him, and that of there is a corruption in the military, and that the Egyptian military should be clean. Our generation has no future, but now we have our dignity back. We have a voice, and we can speak out loud. And even if we have to live this revolution forever, we have to hold to this.
Yeah, we have a lot of work. We paid the price for freedom.
Lawyer Ziad Al-Alimi and surgeon Shadi Al-Ghazali.
We don't want a military to go to...
Or a religious.
Yeah, or a religion. So we have a right to make a democratic country. We have a right to make a justice in our country.
The voices from Tahrir were recorded by Human Rights Watch. They're part of a multimedia collaboration between The New Yorker magazine, the photographer Platon, and Human Rights Watch. You can see the photographs and videos at hrw.org. Additional audio courtesy of Daniel Finnan of Radio France Internationale, Al Jazeera, Rami Raouf, and Matthew Castle of justimage.org. The music was by Rami Assam, Mohamed Munir, El Tambura, Joseph and James Tawadros, along with the protesters and performers in Tahrir Square. Voices from Tahrir was produced by Barrett Golding of Hearing Voices, with Jesse Graham, senior multimedia producer at Human Rights Watch. Mix engineer was Robin Wise. I'm Heba Mariah of Human Rights Watch.
Hearing Voices is supported by the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art.
اضحكوا يا ثورة اضحكوا يا ثورة
From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.